This is the Q&A from the presentation of the film Israelism on March 4th at the Unitarian Universalist Church here in Eugene. And it has a wide variety of opinions. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends.
Yeah, my name is Mark. The thing that bothered me about this presentation, which I thought was overly long, is that we didn't hear the Palestinian point of view. So, you know, mutual empathy. Okay, I know where the Israelis hardcore are coming from, the Palestinian sympathizers from the Israel side, but we didn't hear from the Palestinians.
Sammy, why?
My name is Mike Lewis. Unfortunately, I know what I would have said about 3 hours ago, but I read the United Nations report on rape, necrophilia, and continuing rape of Israeli prisoners held in Gaza. That just came out today. The 9 investigators from the United Nations issued their report. They confirmed these problems. It made me, I personally was so ill when I read this report and what's going on with the prisoners there now. I have trouble getting beyond that to something more basic. But my comment today, the movie I thought was very good. I thought it was pretty mild. I thought it would be much more stringent about its points. All I wanted to see was a map. I mean, was it saying that there's an Israel somewhere, or were they saying there's an Israel nowhere? That's been a problem that I've heard at many demonstrations. They say from the river to the sea. That's a code phrase for saying there's no Israel. Now, that might have been the position of the people that were speaking, I don't know. But I would point that out. If you decide Israel is somewhere, then we can have one solution. If you say Israel is nowhere, in 1 minute, my concern about the rape report is just so massive. But I wanted to see some border. I don't care what the border is. It could have been the one at Camp David that Arafat walked away from. It could have been going back to pre-67 war borders. It could have been some map somewhere. I know the United Nations schools, in 30 seconds, the maps they taught in their schools had a blank for Israel. It was all Palestine. They had not even a tentative map. And that's been the Palestinian position that I've run across. I don't know how we ever get to a solution unless we admit there should be a borderline somewhere.
There was.
No, not on this map. And not at the United Nations schools. And if you look at the maps, they're popular with the United Nations Relief Organization. They were in the schools, Hamas schools, and that's it. I'll pass it to Steve. Should I pass it on to someone else?
Yeah.
Here, I'll let you do it. You do a great job.
Thank you.
You want to speak more?
Not yet.
Oh, not yet. Okay.
It's a process.
Who wants to speak?
Hi there. Well, I'm Warren. This is my wife, Arlene. I grew up 58 years in Berkeley. The age of 2 till the age of 60, and my parents were pretty progressive. My parents were fairly progressive Unitarians. We went to church on Christmas Eve once a year, whether we needed it or not. And my parents talked a lot about the various problems that racism and so forth throughout society. We lived up in the Berkeley Hills, so we were privileged, to say the least. Anyway, I'm here to learn and understand a little more about what I think, and learn about what I haven't been thinking about. And I think Arlene's here for the same purpose. We're just trying to pick up some information and get some borders around all the different thoughts we've had. One thing I thought about when you were mentioning doing that little map, if there's a map, it may imply a two-state solution, which a lot of us believe in, but that's counter to what a lot of people who are involved in the conflict don't want to believe in. So that's maybe the reason there's not a map yet. this guy is head of AIPAC. I've rarely seen a better example of somebody who is lost in his own misery, if you will. And I'll say no more now.
Thank you. Oh, good point. Maybe you can pass it to the next person.
Well, my name is Gary Braun. I read an article, it was like 14, 15, Newsweek, about how the lot of the lines and the way it was kind of captured, if you will, for lack of a better word, was the type of the water. And there was mention about how the water is such, you know, a thing. And here in the Pacific Northwest, we may not relate to water, but water is the thing that the world's going to be, in general, all over the place at war about. And we don't learn how to share the water and use it wisely, then this will kind of spread, and it'll be division, and it'll be about idealism, and it'll be about everything but the water. And the water is what's sacred. And perhaps the water of life is what can bring us some unity around this. It's in my heart.
My name is Sarita, and I don't want to make any points, I just maybe really quick tell you a little bit about me. So I grew up a nice Jewish girl in Boston, a lot of the things in the film spoke to my actual experience, although I'm pretty old. And we had, you know, every Zionist organization, you know, we got our magazines and everything. And I went to a Jewish summer camp, but it was not a Zionist Jewish summer camp. No. But it was Jewish. And in 1964, I went to Israel. I lived for a year, lived on a kibbutz, 64, 65. Now at the time, and it blows my mind all the time, this was 3 years before 67. When I was there, everybody that I encountered, and these are the Israelis, and at that time you could not go. It was the Israelis that were all surrounded by barbed wire, and the Israelis could not go anywhere. But everybody there was really helpful that the solution was literally around the corner.
It was 30
seconds. Oh, okay. Anyway, I left somewhat disillusioned and did not return until 2006, where I went with a delegation of the Passionate Listening Project. We went to the West Bank. We were supposed to go to Gaza. We couldn't. Then about 6 or 7 years, when I came back, I tried all kinds of things in this community to make people understand what was going on over there. All those things in there I saw with my own eyes. And for about 3 or 4 years, I had programs. I had Michael Lerner here. I had a woman who wrote a book about Palestine here. We had very less than the people in this room. Well, when Rabbi Lerner was here, we had several hundred. Six or 7 years ago, my son, who did a birthright, but his was called a liberal birthright. It was supposedly a non-Zionist birthright. He met some people. We had about a dozen people, mostly students at U of O. We had this group called Decolonizing Judaism, the DJs. And we met for about a year or so. And then people kind of split up and went on their way. So I just wanted to let you know about some of the stuff that's happened in this community. Oh, and the other thing is that my husband and I, especially my husband, was very involved. If anybody remembers Pacifica Forum, that he fought like anything against the very real anti-Semitism that was going on at the U of O. So I've been on both sides.
My name's Mark Rabinowitz. I've only been to Israel once. I was 10 years old. And it was a shock. It took me until adulthood to really process. It was a year after the Yom Kippur War. And I had a distant cousin who was killed in that war. He was flying a fighter plane. He'd been a pilot for El Al, the national airline, and he was shot down by the Egyptians, dropping bombs on Egypt, is my understanding. But I've never felt any anger or sense of revenge about it, just sadness. And I think somewhere in there is a small step towards the way out. Yes, Hamas is doing horrible, unspeakable things. But the destruction of the Gaza ghetto is also horrible. Probably orders of magnitude more. We don't even know the full extent of what's being done. And someone's going to have to be the last victim. And that's really hard to take in. A couple months ago, I read this book, My Friend, the Enemy, by Yuri Averny, who was a very famous and notorious Israeli peace activist and Knesset member and 1948 fighter. And it's his account of independent diplomacy with the PLO in the late 70s and early 80s, back when the PLO was enemy number one in Israel. And he thought that peace was going to come by the mid-80s, which of course didn't. And there's a term called cat's paw, which is not about a literal kitty cat, but it's a term for an entity that works on behalf of another to do their dirty deed. And that's how I see Israel's militarism in the Middle East, as well as the cat's paw of Iran and Russia, and there are many other bad actors. And I just want to say one last thing. In the film, Sami Awad says he went to Auschwitz and gained new empathy for the Jewish trauma. There's a reconciliation group in Israel I've read about. They take Palestinians to see Yad Vashem, which is the National Holocaust Museum in Israel, and they take Israelis to see destroyed villages that were destroyed in 1948. And I just want to recommend Martin Luther King and his speech, Loving Your Enemies, which is online. And that's not enough, but it's a start.
Hi, everybody. My name is Moore. I grew up in Eugene, but I've lived in Israel for the majority of the past 10 years, since about 2013 until last July. I was in the Israeli army for about 3 years. So, you know, everything in this movie was, you know, I very much understood it from a very personal place. You know, whether it's the connection to Israel, you know, my whole family's Israel, my grandparents were displaced on October 7th. My mom still lives here. My brother was in Gaza, my friends were in Gaza, some friends were in the north, family. And, you know, it's annoying to say, but it's, you know, it's complicated. The whole thing is complicated. Every part of this movie has so many different ways to look at it. And, you know, they try to explain it, right? The beginning talks about the connection that's tried to be built among youth in Israel. And, you know, it is an incredibly beautiful, amazing thing to be connected to your culture, your heritage, and build a community around that. And it's also a really scary thing because someone is also building a narrative that could be used for something potentially dangerous and harmful to someone else. And you see that. But it's not one or the other, it's both. And, you know, I only have a minute, but there's so many things there's so many sides that are so negative and harmful and so positive or complicated or everything. You know, he thought the Eitan, one of the soldiers, you know, I had the exact same position as him in the army. I had done very similar things. You know, he talked about taking someone who was arrested to the base next to Hawa, which is like in the West Bank, and what the police did to him there, which is horrible, and the fact that he didn't stand up, you know, I'm proud of him for speaking up now, but obviously it was horrible at the time. And, you know, maybe I can just say it because it's easier for me to say, but I don't think that's something that would ever happen when I was there in the Army, so it's hard to imagine something like that happening in his experience. And, you know, we arrested someone and took him to the detainment there, and, you know, obviously it was a horrible situation, no one wanted to be there, but we were just as respectful as we could be. When he asked for a cigarette, you know, one of the soldiers took out his own cigarette and gave it to him, and you kind of see how there's, in a situation where 20-year-olds are responsible for, you know, enforcing the commands of these, you know, commanders and doing things that they don't really know what's happening. It's like, obviously there's going to be situations where people take advantage of it, people do things that are horrible because of whatever indoctrination that they have had. But the thing is, it's just very easy to sit here and watch and say that's horrible, than, you know, to be there and actually deal with the situation in real time. And I feel like I'm rambling a little bit and I've gotten a little off track, but what I really want to get across is that that is a reality, but it's not the only reality. And it's really important, I think, to watch this, to internalize it and say that that exists, and that is a narrative that has a lot of truth in it, but it's not the only narrative. And there's, you know, other realities, and there's more history, and it's very complex, and I just encourage everyone here to take this, see it for what it is, and continue to learn, continue to educate yourself, and continue to speak with people, whether it's people like myself who have lived there, have lived in America, people who have lived, you know, in the West Bank, in Gaza, people who have lived in similar situations, and just try to learn from personal experience as much as possible, and kind of gather as many narratives as possible, and try to understand and see for yourself what feels right and what feels, and what one's confusing, ask questions.
What we do ripples out. And so this issue is far away, but what we do here matters. As in the film showing, there's anti-Semitism here. There's a lot of divisiveness here. And for me, it's the challenge is how do I step forward and address that in my own community? Because to me, that ripples out around the world. And so I feel empowered to do that, but also I recognize my own fear to do that. So if you're interested in doing that kind of work, I want to work with you. And there's a group starting called Braver Angels in town here to talk to liberals and conservatives and amongst people with differences.
I was to Palestine and Israel. I believe it's, I don't know, I'm very old and I forget things. But I believe it was in the 1960s. And then it was starting then, the strife between we knew at that time and from then on that we really, for the Mideast to be safe and livable, we needed a separate country for Palestine from Israel. And that's what they tried to develop. But since then, and recently, when I hear of all the thousands and thousands of children and women who have been murdered in this terrible campaign that's going on, I'm horrified. I'm horrified that we can allow that to happen anywhere in the world and just sit here. You know, this is, it's no way to explain it, how horrible it must be to be there. Even when I visited in the 1960s, we knew there was problems. And we knew that Palestine had to be a separate country. And that should have been, when it was separated and given its land, we should have stood up and made sure that that stayed that way.
I'm Krista. I know that there's all sides, but I do have respect for the international courts, like I think it's the ICJ, is that in The Hague? And they ruled it is genocide, no, and
they did not.
I know that
they did not.
Okay, well they ruled something.
Well, something is different from genocide. They refused to rule it was genocide.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I don't know all the details. I think there's some kind of order in this world, and I'm very concerned. I also heard that the United States just isn't part of that, and I just feel as an American citizen, there is so much money going to killing, to weapons,
right.
And it's the ruling class all over the world that's profiting off of this, and it's not going to, you know, there's a little bit of humanitarian stuff, but it's nothing compared to all the weaponry that our tax dollars are paying for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, when is it going to end? Now the Houthis are involved, you know, and I know people from the Middle East, they say they're worried about what's going to happen in Iran. And I just think all this weapon profiteering, there's no end to it. And it's here in the United States too. We see all the, you know, the money's not being spent for people to go to college and healthcare and all these things we need. And I think I did read that our aid to Israel sends Israeli soldiers to college, but, you know, I guess we send our soldiers to college too, but I'm just really concerned about all the war economy that runs our country.
I would like to share something, not as a facilitator, but as a member of the audience. I am particularly troubled by the fact that my tax dollars are funding this killing.
Yeah.
I've called the president a dozen times and the senators as well, but our president announced a few weeks ago that what Israel is doing is over the top, direct quote, and then he handed them $52 billion worth of arms. So we need to call him on that. We need to call him and our senators and our congressmen and say, we don't want our dollars used to kill people. And if we say that and they stop doing that, this killing will stop. We can affect this with our voice.
My name's Andre. This makes my heart tremble. So I have a little trouble speaking, but I'll do my best. I just wanted to clarify, the ICJ ruling was as a dispute between nations that are part of the Genocide Convention. And so when they're meeting to make that ruling, it's to decide whether or not there should be plausible genocide and provisional measures required of whatever parties were involved, and they ruled in favor of provisional measures requiring Israel to follow all of the Genocide Conventions and not to do any actions that are listed under the definition of genocide, which includes killing members of the group, among other things. So, in reading that, my heart was saddened that they did not include in that a explicit requirement for a ceasefire.
Mm-hmm.
And my worries were instantly met by Israel's response to those rulings, as well as their neglect and the media's general coverage or lack of coverage of the rulings. But I just want to share in my short time that I started out understanding this conflict only as a dispute among religious groups. And when I learned about the explicitly colonial writings of the leaders of Zionism,
mm-hmm.
early on, where they are calling and talking about their tactics of how they're going to displace the people who live there purposefully, it totally transformed my understanding of the situation, as well as learning about how the population that lives there, many of them are descended from Jewish people and were converted to different belief systems, including Christianity and Islam over time. And so it really, learning those things really transformed my understanding, deepened my understanding. And I encourage you all to go learn about those things. Mm-hmm. Colonialism, intentionality, tactics, they're all still being used today. Mm-hmm. And it's explicit. Mm-hmm. It's not, it's written, it's in statements, it's in videos, it's all recorded. So it's not just hearsay. So please.
My name's Joan, and I have a lot of thoughts and feelings about this whole disaster. But what's, for a moment, what I'm going to say speaks to my personal fear that this issue could propel domination by the right wing in our upcoming election. And that whatever we think of Biden and what he's doing, I can't imagine that Donald Trump would be doing anything more in line with at least what I think about this issue and a whole host of other things that are of equal importance.
My name is Rob Miller. I keep thinking in my mind, though, like my heart will slow down and I won't be, my heart won't be beating quite so fast, and my mind will just clear and I'll just say all the wonderful things I think I should be able to say, and I don't think that's going to happen, so I'll just say what's here. A couple of weeks ago, I went to a protest that JVP, the Palestinian Student Organization, put on. I did something for the first time in my life, which was I flew a flag. As an American Jew, I stood there on the on the 18th, that bridge that goes over 18th, and flew a Palestinian flag. I felt good. I never thought I would have done that. I look at this movie and I see how I was indoctrinated in the Hebrew Academy in Miami Beach, even in 1970 and 1971 and 72, that I was supposed to follow, I was supposed to believe in the Israeli army, and I was supposed to believe in the state of Israel, and being an American Jew meant I was supposed to have allegiance to the state of Israel. And it's not true. I feel really concerned right now. I'm still very concerned about House Resolution 894. That makes me potentially wrong or potentially criminal, because I think I might be becoming an anti-Zionist, or certainly I'm not in favor of this program that's going on right now. And I am not an anti-Semite. I'm a Jew, and I'm not a self-hater. I actually love myself as a Jew, and I love the Jewish people, and I really hate what's going on right now. I want to say a word for education. Thanks, Andrew, for saying that. 100 Years War on Palestine. 100 Years War on Palestine, Rashid Khalidi. I very much recommend reading it. Very eye-opening, just to understand the Palestinian perspective. I really want to encourage people to keep reaching, to keep writing, and keep reaching out, and keep protesting, and keep saying something, because it does matter, and that's why. You know, that's why there is some pushback from our government. It's incredible to me that we keep blocking a ceasefire in the UN. I also want to say a word for magnitude. I think I'm about done. The word for magnitude, the scale of what's happened, the scale of Israeli power versus the scale of Palestinian power, it's just not the same magnitude. What happened on October 7th is horrible, but what's happened to them is what's happened since then is magnitudes worse. And when they're saying hundreds of thousands are in risk of famine, that means they may die any moment from not having another bite to eat. So I think it's time for all of us, please, like, keep saying something, keep reaching out, keep showing up, don't get numb. This is a horrible thing that's happening.
Hi, my name's Fran. In the late 70s, I lived in Israel for 2 years, and the anger and the hatred and the distrust was so palatable, and that was a relatively peaceful time. I spent about 6 months in an extremely orthodox religious school, and also on a non-religious kibbutz, and then also was invited to a number of Palestinian villages and had dinner with people, and they were very good to me. I have absolutely no hope. I'm sorry to say that. I think the Middle East is going to implode. It's when I hear people talk about two-state solution, my gut says it's too late.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, but it's, as you said, it is so complicated. But human beings, unfortunately, are really good at destroying one another. I guess if I could wish anything, I wish we could go back to 1948. I think a lot of things were done wrong. I think when you move into a land, and understandably the Jewish people, when they moved back into Israel, that, you know, there was, you know, it was coming on the heels of the Holocaust. So there was a lot of pain and hope, and they did what they had to do. But there were people living there, and there was relatively no effort to learn their language, to learn their culture. They were their neighbors. And instead, there was a lot of expulsion and a lot of, again, hatred and distrust. And even today in Israel, I have friends there who have been there 50 years and don't speak a word of Arabic. That's not true on the other side. There are many more Arabs that speak Hebrew than there are Israelis that speak in Arabic. So, you know, that needed to change too. If you look at a map of where these settlements are, there are something like 150 settlements on the West Bank and 100 outposts. And the people that live there are extremely militant. And many of them believe that the Arabs just need to be expelled or killed or whatever. This is our land. And, you know, if in fact there was an effort to make a two-state solution, I actually think there would be civil war in Israel. So I only have another 20 years on the planet. I know for sure I will never see peace there. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope that those of you who have hope are right and I'm wrong. But I just don't feel like it's going to happen.
My name's Don. My name's Don St. Clair, short for St. Clair, and it's got shortened on Ellis Island. My mother was a Holocaust survivor. She was a refugee from Romania. My grandmother talked her husband's way out of a Soviet firing squad. My grandmother saw a Nazi soldier shoot a baby, Jewish baby. My mother lived in caves in Ukraine, starving. The only thing they had to eat were mushrooms that they found in the forest. My father was in the army. I came to America on a boat when I was 2 years old. My 24-year-old child sent us a picture of them laying down in front of Chicago police at a protest. They had a sign on that said Jewish ally. They were blocking the police from moving in on a protest. A Palestinian man laid down with them. The Palestinian man was arrested. My non-binary child, only daughter, was not arrested. It's a privilege. My child has messaged me and said, "Dad, you need to step up." My mother did not survive genocide for me to sit back and let this happen, for people to starve, and my mother starved. I am so deeply imbued with my Jewish tradition, and it teaches me tzedakah, which means not just charity, but righteousness. It teaches me you don't let anybody starve. You don't perpetrate violence. You stand with the oppressed. I went to Israel in 1978 for 2 weeks. We had a guided tour. It was a month after Anwar Sadat had visited the president of Egypt. and Egypt and Israel had signed a peace treaty after what could be equivalent of 3,000 years of war, 4,000. People were dancing in the streets. When we got to Ramallah on the West Bank, where Rachel's well is, our Israeli Jewish tour guide, a woman named Sarah, rushed out of the bus. She ran over to her Palestinian shopkeeper, tourist shopkeeper friend. They hugged each other, and they were jumping up and down and crying tears of joy, and they were saying, "Do you believe this is possible? Is this really happening?" I just happened to luck out and go to Israel, go to the Middle East, the best time in 3,000 years. And I continued to maintain that vision of hopefulness. There weren't any walls. We went everywhere. What I see now is a very, very different Israel, a very, very different Palestine and West Bank. What happened on October 7th is horrible, and undoubtedly, distant relatives of mine died. What is even more tragic is that the Gazan people are also descendants of the people that were there in that land forever, including Jews and Samaritans, and in Gaza, our relatives are also dying.
I think it's a time to take some action. We've had a peace vigil every Wednesday at 5 o'clock at the old federal building downtown. We're saying ceasefire now, but not just about the current war, about all wars in general. Especially, both Sue and I have spent time in Israel and Palestine in our past. One of the most moving things I've done in my entire life. I made a pledge there I was going to work for peace my entire life, Sue as well. So. It's a critical issue. We need to take action, and let's take action now.
Hi, everybody. My name is Amanda. I am Buddhist, but I'm descended from Euro-Christians. My entire lineage, I can trace it back to the beginning of settler colonization on this land, all the way back to Scrolls in England. So I know some settler colonization when I see it. I also wanted to speak to some of the points that other folks were making earlier today about learning that proper history. Anti-Semitism, white people have used it for a really long time to pretend that Jewish people are controlling the world in secret when really it's us screwing everybody over. And so I just wanted to name that when we're only talking about this from a Jewish and Palestinian lens and leaving out the fact that the Balfour Declaration was signed by a British Christian Zionist in 1917, before the Holocaust, I want to say that to every one Jewish Zionist in the entire world, there are 20 to 30 Christian Zionists. They are the ones at the white national conventions that you're seeing up there. There's 20 to 30 to every one Jewish Zionist. And so this is a white people problem too. This is a Euro-Christian problem too. And we need to be talking about it. In the Christian Zionist lens, the purpose of Israel is to get all Jewish people to the Holy Land and to start the rapture by which all Muslim folks and all Jewish folks will be dead. So that's the purpose of Israel from a real colonizer perspective. And it was heartbreaking to watch Jewish folks up there and the propaganda that they go through. Like, Judaism is one of the most beautiful religions in the whole world. One of the top priorities is valuing protecting life above all else. And it was so to see my people be so evil to corrupt that and create that was horrific. It's horrific.
Hi, my name's Liana. I just wanted to say that I feel really grateful that we're all here tonight. I was really struck by something in the film towards the end where someone said something about how American Jews taking a stand that is critical of Israel's policies. American Jews taking stands that are critical of Israel as a settler colonial state, as an ethno-nationalist state that's inherently a right-wing project is so powerful because the optics are powerful of that. And just what something looks like, just it being performative, that's not all there is. It's true that there are more Christian Zionists than there are Jewish Zionists, but as an American Jew who was absolutely indoctrinated into Zionism from a young age, I have to say that it's been a process to unlearn some of the things that I was conditioned to believe, or I think it's so important to listen to so many different perspectives, and I think that that's totally crucial. But some of those perspectives we have to listen to are Palestinian perspectives. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes when people talk about complexity and nuance, somehow that gets missed. And so I'm so grateful that we're all here today, and I'm assuming that I'm not the only Jewish person. I've heard a couple other people say they're Jewish too. And so I just want to say thank you that we're all here and we're all having these conversations because that helps to facilitate solidarity. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Leah Jo. I wanted to say that I'm a new parent, and almost half of my child's life has been as this genocide is going on against the Palestinian people, and I come today with a broken heart, witnessing, having the ability to witness the violence that's happening every day that my country, that my tax dollars are funding. And so I think what you spoke to so beautifully, like, we all actually have a stake and role in this because we're taxpayers. And the reason that I have learned to speak so confidently against both anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism has been because my Jewish comrades have shown me how. And I believe that at a minimum, what we can call for, and I hear, I'm like, oh my gosh, I hear you when you say you have no hope. I'm like, I can't imagine what hope and possibility looks like, but at a minimum, my hope is that we stop funding the violence and that we stop buying the weapons and that we stop contributing to the level of horror and terror that is happening. And that we listen to each other and come together and trying to make a path forward where we are the best kind of humans that we can be. And that as a settler on this land, as a white person on this land, I know that my liberation is tied up with a call to land back. And that to me doesn't mean that we go away. It means we figure out how to live in right relationship with the indigenous people in the land that we inhabit, and with the planet, with the earth, and with each other. And that's my like hope, that's my hope and wish, and I'm really grateful for being in a space and hearing folks' perspectives tonight. So thank you, and thanks for organizing and bringing this video. I wanted to see it.
Hi, my name's Bob, and I share lots of the kinds of emotions that people have mentioned, but what I wanted to talk about is a few ideas that were sort of popping up as I was listening to this. All of these are just for seeds for thought for maybe they'll help somebody think through this better than I have. So the thing that I'm bothered by is, what does peace look like in this area? How can we do it? I have the same skepticism that was mentioned earlier about the two-state solution. And one thing that I was thinking about is, at the beginning of this country, some of the founders created this thing called freedom of religion. And the reason they gave for it was that they wanted to not have the endless wars that were going on in Europe. So we might think, if we actually continue to simply organize countries by religion, is that ever going to be peaceful? The second thing that it reminded me of is, I was in a lecture on the psychology of bias. And this particular one talked about creating borders and separating people, and when there was no contact between the people on either side of the borders, each side started to think about the other side as being evil and being inferior and some similar kinds of statements. But then, when they started creating common problems for these groups and they had to work together to solve them, this started breaking down those kinds of perceptions that they had. And I'm wondering if somehow something could happen to get the Israelis and the Palestinians to do something together that would help.
Climate change.
What is now clear hatred between them because they've been killing each other.
Thanks, Bob, if you could wrap up.
Okay, I'll just one final thing then. As was also mentioned, we've become very good at killing each other. What I'd like to see is, can we become very good at working together with each other? And that's what I would like to see.
Yeah, first of all, I want to say that Merkley does have a 20-minute video where he speaks about what really the case is and how what's happening to the Palestinians matters. I urge anyone to watch it. I don't get any calls back from Val Hall on this. The one thing that I don't know if people remember, you know, when 9/11 happened, I didn't like Bush before it happened. I didn't like him after. They had hundreds of thousands of people, days on end, for like 6 months protesting against Netanyahu. And Netanyahu is the person that really is making this happen. If this ends, then he's got to go for criminal charges, and then he really should be going for charges of genocide at The Hague, is my opinion on the man. And it's sad that just one man has this much power. You know, I was really happy when I heard, I read in the paper that the rabbi, they had somebody that spray painted white power on the synagogue, and in the same sentence he said, you know, yes, anti-Semitism is on the rise, but so is Islamophobia. So she's seeing it in her right way. And but I just want to say that, you know, just this endless supply of money to Israel, I mean, I'm not going to vote. I'm going to probably vote for Biden. I don't really want to. But Biden said, you know, back in the 80s, he said, if there wasn't an Israel, we'd have to create one. Because basically what it is we're the mad dog for the world, is a dog, you know, and Israel is the mad dog for the Middle East. You know, and Biden said, well, I don't want to widen this war. And then he went and bombed a bunch of countries. And, you know, just after he said that, and so I don't know, I mean, I think that we just need to scale back. We need to stop funding Israel. And, you know, it's just got to be cut off. I don't want to, they're the number one recipient of U.S. military aid. And anyway, I'm down there at the federal building on the 15th. We're going to be having a protest at the new federal building. So I'd like people to join us and, yeah, just educate yourselves. Thank you.
I hear a lot of calls for kind of unconditional ceasefire on the part of Israel, and I just don't quite understand where that comes from in terms of, like, the hostage situation. Like, what is the justification for Israel to cease fire? And I definitely hear, you know, the call for, you know, transparency in terms of their actions, called by the ICJ and everything like that. Transparency is obviously very important to prevent things like genocide. But in terms of like an unconditional ceasefire, given the situation with the hostages, I'm just curious as to what kind of the justification is there. And I don't ask this cynically, I'm genuinely curious. You don't have to answer in a group setting, you can answer one-on-one if you're more comfortable, but yeah, that's just the question that I have.
I wanted to speak to your question about ceasefire, because it speaks directly to something else I wanted to say, but didn't get to because I was addressing the ICJ clarification. And that is that one thing that was said in this video that I deeply agree with and really touched my heart was the sentiment that Jewish safety is tied to safety of all people around the world. And that especially includes the Palestinian people in Gaza, and the West Bank, and Jerusalem, and around the world. And so when the question about how does ceasefire tie into the safety of Jewish people, and that includes people who were captured by Hamas and held as hostages. I think that, to me, from my perspective, it seems obvious that a ceasefire is much safer for hostages being held in that area than bombing the area, restricting food from getting into that area, purposely destroying water sources in that area, eliminating electricity and communications capabilities, medication and aid, and destroying hospitals. I think that if there was anything to do, anything nearing bringing safety for the people who are being held hostage there, I would think it would be first ceasefiring. And to me, that does not only call for unilateral ceasefire on Israeli side, although it may look that way simply because how much power Israel has in the situation. The power dynamic is so asymmetrical that that means when we're calling for ceasefire, that has the onus on the person who has all the power in the situation. Now, in general, safety for the whole situation, I think, is tied into ending in apartheid conditions in Israel. This movie only slightly touched on apartheid conditions, actually, because it made it seem like only Palestinians who live in Gaza or the West Bank have apartheid conditions, but also includes people who live in Israel and are Palestinian Israeli citizens. They also have apartheid conditions, rights and laws that are different than Jewish Israelis that live there. We need to end that. We need to end the occupation, eliminate the settlements, the illegal settlements, and allow the right of return for Palestinians to return to their homes. And we need to end the control that Israel has over the areas in that, like the physical control with walls, as well as the control over their decision-making power, laws, and food, and electricity, all those things. They need to end that control. That is how you secure safety for Jews, is by ending those things. If you're a Jewish person who cares about Jewish safety, or if you're any human being who cares about the safety of human beings, you'd want those things to end. You'd want the asymmetry to end.
I'm going to address your question more also. Hello, my name is David. I'm with Eugene Peace Works, and we're the group that's fiscal sponsor for KPW Community Radio, which I encourage you to tune in at 97.3, because there is a lot of good independent media there, programming, Democracy Now!, alternative radio, and so forth. And I think it's important to recognize that there would be even more opposition to the Gaza war if the media was doing its job, the mainstream media, but it's not. So they're watering things down. People aren't getting the full impact of that war and the scale of destruction. So important to seek out other sources of media and encourage your friends and relatives to do the same. Don't let them depend on the mainstream media. Also, I wanted to mention rootsaction.org if you haven't signed up for their alerts. It's a citizen lobbying group with over 1 million members. Thank you. And they identify good leverage points that you for quick actions that you can take, such as signing petitions and phone calls and so forth. And finally, I wanted to mention that I thank everybody for being here, of course, and to have this kind of dialogue, I think, is really important. We need more of it around the world, obviously. But I hope that
we could come out of this feeling some sense of empowerment and realize that what was identified in this movie is the fact that a lot of misinformation and lying has taken place over the years, and that has contributed to the miseducation of many of us. And so it's not surprising that the challenge we face. So we can take some hope from the fact that this movie has been made. I hope it's seen more widely, and I hope we can all be part of that movement for positive social change.
Thank you.